Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, everyone. It is another episode of The Cocktail Hour featuring Matt Harris and Sam Snelling. We're here to talk all things booze. Matt, what is in your glass?
The Heaven Hill 6-year-old old style bourbon, 80 proof. And a little bit metallic-y if you don't have ice in it, but you get it iced down. It's got a nice little sweet finish to it. It's not a bad little sipper. And for $15, you can't beat the price.
Good old Heaven Hill 6-year, and then they basically repackaged their 7-year and doubled the price, or more than doubled the price.
They tripled it. $45 for the 7-year now.
I like it.
It's good, and I've heard good things out of it. We were in Kentucky a couple weeks ago and stopping in some package stores, and every owner that we talked to said it's good stuff, but it's a little... It's basically in the same vein as the 6-year. The difference is you can't get the 6-year outside of Kentucky. So that's... like, you have to drive into the state of Kentucky, and that's true. We stopped, like, right over the border in Indiana, and... everything else that like circulates or gets dropped off by distributors there is pretty much replicated except for the Heaven Hill 6-year. So it's really something you can only get in Kentucky. But if you can find the 7-year, you're going to pay 3 times the price, but you're going to get a really, I think it's a solid bourbon.
I haven't opened mine yet.
I would encourage you to. It's really good. It needs a little more ice than usual. It's a little bit hotter on the front end, but once you get a little ice on it, man, it's fantastic. It's almost like a weeded in a certain sense. It's a little bit, it gets into that kind of sweetness profile.
Well, speaking of weeded, that's what's in my glass is a little Weller Special Reserve. So the story here, Matt, is I did my own bourbon hunt. And I found a couple of bottles in Illinois. So I bought one for myself, and I was going to buy one and get one for my dad. I forgot, and this is where I'm going to give a little bit of a shout out. I forgot it like a couple weeks ago when I was kind of looking for this Special Reserve just to get a bottle. I found one online at a Houston liquor store, and it was at cost, which is, you know, pretty tough to find Weller Special Reserve for cost.
Unless you go into Kentucky and get batshit lucky.
Right. And I think, like, if you're in the right place, the right time, Total Wine or one of, like, the major retailers will sell it for cost as well. But so I reached out to good friend Ben DeBose. If you like Houston sports, Houston area sports, I recommend you give him a follow. Ben's actually was on the previous version of Rock'em Nation podcast. I think we did an NBA podcast with him and Dieter Kurtenbach way back in the day. But Ben's a good guy, and I was just like, hey, if you're ever in the area, swing by this liquor store in Houston and see if they have it at, like, within this price, and if they do, buy it, and I'll reimburse you. And so forgot about it, bought two bottles of my own, and then he messaged me like 2 days ago, I think, and basically said, hey, like, took me a while to get there, but I went by and they had it, and so I bought it, and yeah, so that's on its way. It's getting here Friday, so I have three bottles. So I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna open one of them and start drinking, and so that's what I was having tonight.
Yeah, we went L had like been going stir crazy, and we live like, if you can drive 75 or 80, you can be in Louisville proper in like an hour 35. So that's, yeah, we did, and we like went down to Bardstown and worked our way back up from Bardstown, from Toddy's, all the way up through Louisville, and we were up in the Highlands section, which the Highlands in Louisville, which is an older neighborhood, but it's not old money, but it's also not like straight middle class, but they've got like a good kind of boulevard where they've got like Liquor Worlds and Total Wine, but they're like C-store size, and if you go into them, like, you're going to see a lot of standard stuff. But if you go talk to the guys at the counter and you say, hey, I'm hunting for this and I'm willing to pay, like, what's base list? So if you're looking for Weller Special Reserve, which you got, like, it lists at around $21.99, but it's moving on the market, like, what, $49 to $55 if you find a good liquor store?
Yeah, I'd say probably $50 on average.
$50 on average is roughly there. And you're like, look, I'm not going to, like, haggle with you. If you've got a couple bottles in the back, I'll pay. And that's what we did. Like, we were up, we had finished lunch, we'd stopped at some other C stores and pulled in. The guy tried to get us to buy some stuff that was in like the $90 to $100 range. And I said, no, he ran out to our car and said, well, you know, I just now found some Weller Special Reserve in the back. It's $50.99. And we have here, we have a 1.75 liter Weller, and we didn't have a 750 mil one, so I went in and bought that one just because it looked just obscene to have 1.75 liters of Weller Special Reserve on our bar. So now we've stashed the big bottle for our wedding, and that's what people are going to drink the night that we get hitched. We're going to save that, and because when we talked to our caterer, they were going to charge an obscene amount, and we've worked out a deal that we're going to be able to give folks, including yourself, Weller Special Reserve for our wedding. And we have a 750 ml bottle on our bar that we can enjoy. So lesson is, always talk to clerks. Don't like try and pre-haggle. Don't BS. Just be like, look, if you've got it for this at the market going rate, do you have it in back? And they might be willing to like be good people and cut you a deal. So that's what we came back with.
Well, cool. I'm happy with my my three bottles of Weller Special Reserve. I'm looking forward to Father's Day and giving one of those bottles to my dad.
That's a great gift.
It is. And he's like one of the guys who was like on the original Weller train. I remember as I was starting to get into bourbon, he was, you know, preaching like one of his favorite bottles was always the, you know, the W.L. Weller Special Reserve, just because it was, you know, cheap and delicious, and then you just couldn't find it forever. And so now I'm happy because I mean, I had to drive to Illinois to get it, but it's not a long drive to Illinois. So I think we could probably conclude our cocktail hour with that. This is actually an episode of Dive Cuts.
we talk about basketball in this podcast, if you believe it. If you can believe that.
We have done 26, and now this is the 27th episode of season 3. And we've got a really cool guest that I'm looking forward to talking to. I went out and chatted up with Suichi Terada of the Kansas City Star, the Missouri beat writer, and figured it would be good to have the guy that ruined Mizzou sports on our podcast.
Did he ruin Mizzou sports? Or did he just, like, did he show up at a point when Mizzou sports regressed very hard to the median for what it is?
I would say if you are at any point in your life around Mizzou sports for an extended period of time, you are probably going to experience a hard regression. And he just happened to start during that hard regression.
Exactly.
So, well, let's talk to Suichi. I think you guys will enjoy this conversation. And I'd like to welcome into the pod Suichi Terada. He is the Kansas City Star beat writer for the University of Missouri. You can follow him on Twitter at Suichi Terada. That is Suichiterada. We just want to make sure they can find you, Suichi. So how's it going? I hear some wind around you. I think you're maybe outside doing this podcast with us.
Yes, I'm in beautiful Columbia, Missouri. The weather isn't too bad today. It's like 75. I figured I'd go to the park, you know, and actually enjoy the outdoors before it gets too hot. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I think like the last few weeks have been so kind of brutally hot that this little break we've had has been nice. We actually had the windows open here and in St. Louis myself. Matt, are you also enjoying good weather there in Indy?
Oh, God, no. It was 90 degrees today and swampy, and I about died during a 7-mile run.
Well, maybe it'll hit you tomorrow. I think it's all kind of moving to the east.
I mean, please let that happen.
Well, so one of my favorite little factoids about you, Suichi, is the fact that you joined the Missouri beat, and then the Mizzou Athletics promptly started tanking. So is that directly your fault, or do you think that is purely coincidental?
I think the thing that people forget, Mizzou fans forget something. They like to blame me, but at the same time, you can blame Alex Schiffer for also leaving. I think this is... I'll take some of the blame just because at that point, you know, I come in 5-1, number 22. My first day on the beat was that Vanderbilt game. Everyone forgets about Alex Schiffer, and I just don't think that's fair. He left the beat, and they started losing. There's also another side to the coin, and so I just want to air my grievances in that regard. This is a two-way street, and I feel like it's only been one, and I'd like to make that fact known, or a factoid or whatever.
Suichi, I wanna do an exercise that may recount trauma that may become traumatic for you, but I did an accounting of what happened basically your first 2 months in the job. The Star announced your hire proudly on October 18 and said you would be in Nashville. And Missouri lost that game, which kicked off a 1-5 finish, I believe, 5 losses in a row. And over the preceding 5 weeks, in that stretch, on November 26, the school's NCAA appeal was denied, denying the football program a bowl bid and blowing a hole in its budget to the tune of $10 million.
That was a case.
4 days later.
Yeah, Sprint Center.
4 days. Yeah. 4 days later, Barry Odom is fired after a dead man walking victory in War Memorial Stadium, which I'm glad you and I both enjoyed empty press boxes at War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock, Arkansas. It's a fantastic experience. Everyone should do it. 3 days after Barry is let go, Missouri loses at home to Charleston Southern, capping a 3-game losing streak, which stretched back to said Kansas City trip, where they lost to Butler and Oklahoma. Then I believe 3 or 4 days after Odom is fired, it is leaked that the board of curators hated Jim Sturt's initial pool of football candidates, basically resetting that search. Eli Drinkwitz is then hired on December 9. And then you got a 3-week reprieve, Mr. Terada, before Jeremiah Tillman suffered a foot injury that kept him out ultimately 14 games. Mizzou then loses 5 of 6. After they right the ship against Georgia, Mark Smith goes down with a back injury. And while Xavier Pinson and Drew Smith try and drag Missouri into the SEC tournament, it then gets canceled by a historic pandemic. So yeah, you've seen some things, sir. You've had a good run.
You know, when you put it out there like that, I think when you're in the midst of it, you're just kind of like, it's just one thing after another, you know? I mean, after the NCAA stuff, I had kind of been tipped off that, I remember I was tipped off, actually, Barry and Jim Sterk were meeting on that Saturday after the Black Friday one, so I was like, oh my goodness, this is just another thing. And it just kept on adding, and now here we are. I think the last 3 months is weird just because there hasn't been anything going on. I mean, there's some newsy stuff, you know, recruiting, voluntary workouts, whatever there is during a pandemic. But, yeah, when you lay it out all like that, it's been a crazy half year.
So I tee all that up to ask, like, a legit question. Missouri fans, by nature, are fatalistic, naturally dark, humored, but just your sense of the fan base at this point. I think, you know, we sort of look at it in hindsight, but that I can't think of like a more condensed period where nothing that torpedoes the program, but I think the one thing we talk about, Sam and I talk about a lot, that leads to success in any athletic department is continuity and stability. And I think that's the one thing that even if Missouri's not having a crisis on the scale of like a Baylor or, you know, as you maybe experienced in East Lansing with the Larry Nassar scandal, there's nothing that sort of rises to that level. But I think it's, you look back and you just think there's not been a consistent period where fans can sort of look and say, okay, yeah, we're finding some stability and some continuity. So I was just sort of curious, what's been your impression sort of the fan base and sort of your readership as you kind of come out of that stretch and where they sort of sit, at least based on whatever interactions you've been able to have with folks?
Yeah, I think right after two distinct moments, I remember right after the Vanderbilt game against Mizzou, I remember a few of my, and obviously we're talking Missouri, so we're talking journalists, a lot of sports journalists I know, had at least three or four of them text me and just like, dude, welcome to the Mizzou. I'm just like, oh my God. You know, this is like my like fifth hour on the beat or whatever it was, and I'm just like, all right, let's buckle in here. And the second moment was after the Charleston Southern loss, where I think I just tweeted, I'm like, dude, man, this sucks. You know, it's just like, the thing is too, it's like you hear it all the time about from sports fans about like, woe is me, like, you know, our fan base sucks. And I think there are a few select cases where I'm just like, yeah, dude, this sucks, man. Like, I just feel bad for you. And I felt bad for Mizzou fans, you know? I mean, I'm not a Mizzou fan. Like, I grew up in Michigan. Like, I didn't really have any, like, ties here. Like, I've been to Columbia before I took this job. But it's just like, this sucks. That sucks. You know, I mean, the last 9 games of the season were nice. But it wasn't, you know, 5-4 to finish a basketball season. It was a nice, you know, Xavier Pinson run and everything. Like, there were some positives. I mean, I think if you're a Mizzou fan, you're happy with Eli Drinkwitz getting hired. But it's just like, I mean, man, what do you do? It's just, I feel bad at that point.
I think it's been one long reset, and I think if you're Missouri fans, you sort of think about it from the perspective of football is going through another reset at a period where you thought maybe Barry Odom should be getting into a cycle that was sort of reminiscent of Barry Pinkle, where you peak every 3 to 4 years, and I think basketball, depending on what happens, this upcoming season's kind of at an inflection point with Konzo Martin. I don't think he's on the hot seat. I think his buyout makes that a little bit prohibitive too. But and given what the budget situation is, that also has to be, you know, factored into any decision they make. But it feels like we're at another 3 or 4 year period where the department's hitting a reset button. And as a fan, I think, you know, again, you're not, you know, trawling the bottom of the conference, but you're also not seeing any momentum. You're just sort of stuck in inertia at this point. So I think that, if anything, I think Missouri fans are frustrated from that perspective that, you know, they aren't tanking, but they also aren't moving forward. They're just sort of stuck in, you know, I guess, purgatory between, you know, 7th and 10th in the league in almost any sport that's a revenue sport. So I think that's another bit of frustration on their end.
Yeah. The thing I kind of point at too is just where the coaches are. I mean, you look at Konzo Martin's Wikipedia page. This is, you know, he's under his fourth year. This is kind of uncharted territory for him in that regard. Like, I think when you do speak stability, I think you are seeing that a little bit more. I mean, with basketball especially, you're pretty much coming in with the same roster besides essentially two guys, and you're replacing Reed and Nico essentially. And then I think with Drinkwist, the thing I am mostly going to be curious about is how different they look. I think if they go 6-6, 7-5 next year, I think that's an okay year, especially with the pandemic going on. But it really depends on how they get there, just because, I mean, man, it was those last six games of Missouri football. Like, I just, you know, like, I'm a sports journalist. Like, I, you know, like, I like watching good football. I like watching good sports. And Mizzou's offense was not that. So I think if whatever Drinkwitz does next season, whatever record he gets to, I think if there's a clear step forward offensively and then the defense can continue just being solid, then you're looking at just stability. And I think if Mizzou's in the hunt for an NCAA tournament bid for basketball, then I think that's a solid year, especially coming after whatever the last, you know, year was essentially with the NCAA infractions appeal and all these things just off the field too that were just kind of hung over the program, I think, a little bit.
Well, I also tend to think that a lot of people, you know, particularly like fans of programs, tend to view their own program in a different light than outsiders. And one of the things that I like about talking to people outside of, you know, the Mizzou program is like, even, you know, Matt and I, who I think we do a pretty good job of being, you know, fairly even on Missouri. Like, we tend not to be very Pollyanna about them. I think that most of our predictions are within the realm of realism. I think I'm probably a little bit more of an optimist than maybe my co-host, but you know, but I think a lot of fans tend to kind of look at their own program and think that it is often better than it is. And I think that's a challenge right now for Missouri, particularly since moving to the SEC. So one of the things that I'm kind of curious to kind of get your take on is an outsider's view of like Missouri in the national landscape, or even just in the SEC, you know, a league that is obviously incredibly competitive when it comes to football, you know, with programs that spend more on football than Missouri basically has in their entire athletic budget, you know, but then also a program that has in its history like a pretty rich tradition of basketball, but has really sort of sputtered for the better part of like the last 10 years. So as somebody who is, you know, from the state of Michigan, where Michigan State has, you know, been a national powerhouse for, you know, really probably, you know, the bulk of your lifetime and, you know, most of my lifetime as well. You know, and Michigan has certainly had its high rise moments as well. So, I mean, speaking to Missouri, like where do you sort of see them in, we'll just kind of start with the SEC, and if you want to expand them nationally, like is Missouri a program that can eventually move into, you know, I think what fans are seeing them be maybe right now?
Yeah. It's funny you bring up the two Michigan schools, just because, I mean, they do a lot of just get a lot of national attention. But I think, I mean, if you ask me the same question when I was, you know, I'm 23 now, so if you ask me the same question when I was 15, and then you're looking at the early 2010s when football was good, you got that 07 year semi-recent, basketball was obviously at the peak of its powers when you think of recent history, I think I'd be like, oh yeah, Missouri, I mean, I hear them a lot. It's just a few bad years, I think, really does that. And I think when you say fan expectations, I think Mizzou fans actually kind of got it right. I mean, based on what I read or see on Twitter or anything like that, like, Mizzou fans, for the most part, it seems like, especially for football, they're kind of hoping for, you know, 6-7 years when it's kind of down, and hope for, you know, that shot at the SEC East and an SEC championship, just like in 2013 or 14. So I think the expectations are good in terms of Mizzou fans. I just don't know if they can do it. I think they can. I mean, when you just Missouri, I think, is in a very unique situation, and you hear about this in recruiting a lot, but just the fact that you're the only in-state school, and you got Kansas City a couple hours away, you got St. Louis a couple hours away, like, there's a lot of talent you can pull from. I mean, Illinois is right there. And you can kind of play the Midwest card in the SEC, which is, I think, is kind of strange. And then when it comes to basketball, I mean, there's obviously, when you talk history, sure, there's no Final Four, but you can't really discount what Norm Stewart did for this program, right? So it's just, I feel like there are paths to success. Like, I don't think that's inconceivable or anything Mizzou fans are asking a lot for. I think that's very within the realm of possibility. It's just that it just feels like it feels unfair to judge Missouri for the past few years just because, I mean, there isn't too much going on in terms of success on the field, but then when you think about national storylines, you think about 2015, the protest with the football team, you think Michael Porter Jr. and that one year, but he got hurt. And so those are really the only times when Mizzou was really in that national spotlight. So I don't think it's fair to ask me now just because it's been kind of some lean years, but if they can turn it around, I mean, I don't see why Missouri can't be successful in the long term.
I think it's interesting you bring up sort of the Midwestern perspective. I think I sent this out a couple of weeks ago. You look at least how Konzo's been operating and recruiting. They're pursuing guys in Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin. They're even getting out as far east as Pennsylvania and New Jersey. They've really, I think when you look at the footprint where they're operating, at least on the basketball side, even on the football side, you know, they've had AJ Ofadle sort of working in Michigan a little bit and trying to make some things happen there. They dip into Iowa a little bit. I think there's a weird sort of, you know, I think to a certain degree they're kind of like a ghost Big Ten program in a way, in terms of where they have to operate from, because you look at, from having at least been around the SEC, the proximity question really is a big deal. Even if you were to like go into the nearest SEC states around them, into Arkansas, you know, once you cross that state line, there is really no question about where loyalties lie. A kid that grows up in Arkansas, by and large, will give a lot of, you know, credence to playing at Arkansas. If you go into Tennessee, especially if you try and work in Memphis, at least on the basketball side, you have Memphis with Penny right there, and you also have Rick Barnes making things work with, you know, the University of Tennessee in the East. So for them to really work into that footprint gets harder because there's a lot of options for guys that are in closer proximity. So I think that the one thing that at least staffs on the football side and on the basketball side have had to navigate is, where do we go for talent? You know, we play in this conference where money isn't an issue, where, you know, exposure is not an issue, but we're sort of on the, you know, the frontier of this conference. And in a lot of ways, we may have more resonance with guys who don't play in this league. But if you're trying to recruit, and I think we were talking before we came on, if you're trying to go into Michigan and recruit kids, one, there's major allegiance to, you know, in Ann Arbor and East Lansing. And even if those kids don't get recruited, and even if their kids don't get recruited there, you can go to Iowa, you can go to Wisconsin, there, or you can go to Northwestern. There are more regional programs that are more proximal to you. So I think that their issue is they sort of, again, aren't Big Ten, but they aren't the SEC. And I think there's a question of what niche do you really put yourself in, and how do you identify that? And I know that Barry Odom at least tried to reestablish a Texas pipeline for them, but that's even still a reach because, unlike in the Big 12 days, you don't play 2 to 3 games in Texas every year where where families can come see you. So I think that's, you know, Sam and I have talked about before about that there's an identity crisis that's sort of perpetual with the program since it's made the move. And even within the state, I think, as you'll discover, Missouri's not, you know, I think uniformly behind Missouri. There is a regionality even within the state. So it's a really tough mix for them to sort of pitch an identity and to make that work. So I think that's always been a hard thing for them to sort of play off of, because there's no SEC rivalry that's really emerged. There's no recruiting footprint that's emerged. I think in a lot of ways, Missouri suffers from an identity crisis right now. And I think when you're trying to sell that to kids and talent, that's hard to do. I think people, it's hard for someone to latch onto something. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how Eli Drinkwitz tries to, you know, fashion an identity for the football program. And Konzo Martin, I think, is sort of, over his 3 or 4 years, kind of really, I think, reverted to a Big Ten model of recruiting. And their style also, I think, fits that league a little bit more. So it's just been fascinating to watch them sort of operate as a ghost Big Ten program in another conference.
Yeah, it's, when you think conference realignment, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Mizzou was rumored to the Big Ten first before the SEC. Once again, I was like 15 at the time, so my memory might be might be a little shoddy. But yeah, and I think that's a great point, just because just when you can, if you're a Big Ten program and you can recruit within, you know, the Michigan, the Wisconsins, you're most likely going to guarantee throughout your 4-year career, at least 3 to 4 games in that state where your family can come in. And you kind of saw that with Kobe Brown at Tuscaloosa when,
yeah,
I remember, you know, he had this big contingent of family who drove down. I think it was like a couple hours away, and he really enjoyed that experience. And I think just those small things really help in the recruiting battles. And then you don't really get that with Mizzou, just because, I mean, with football recruiting, it's so difficult to go into an Alabama, a Mississippi, and try to pull those guys. You don't really see them trying to do that too much, just because you only have so many resources and it doesn't make any sense to go to those places. So, yeah, in this identity crisis, I do think Mizzou would have realistically fit the Big Ten a little bit more, just geographically, I think culturally somewhat. I mean, I've heard from people from down in Spring, I've heard from people down south in the state, like, it's more southern the more south you get, but, you know, in Columbia it's more Midwestern, so it is weird or kind of interesting. You know, like Kansas City and St. Louis obviously are very different, being 4 hours apart, and it feels like Missouri is fractured a little bit, and it shows at Mizzou, not just in recruiting, but just who kind of cares about the program and everything. So, I'm glad you brought that up, just because I've thought about it before, and it is weird, just because you could probably thrive on the talent in some ways for both sports if you could get everyone, and obviously, as we know, Mizzou hasn't been able to do that.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I certainly think that, like, Missouri is probably one of the few states that is everything and nothing at the same time, in a way of, like, there are parts of Missouri that is the South. You know, there is parts of Missouri that is the Plains. There is parts of Missouri that is the Midwest. St. Louis is the gateway to the West, but I also think, like, I've always kind of considered St. Louis to be the westernmost eastern city, and Kansas City to kind of be the first real western city. So, like, you know, if you go to Kansas City, you feel a lot more kinship with, like, Denver and Phoenix and cities like that, where St. Louis feels very much more like Pittsburgh or Baltimore, you know, cities of the East. And so, like, all of the differences and the fact that it, you know, Missouri touches, like, all these, you know, more states than any other state in the union. And it just has, like, this unique geography, this unique population. You know, I think for the most part, remembering my history, correctly, but, you know, even during, like, the Civil War, like, the state was split, you know, on whether to be part of the Confederacy or part of the Union. And I think that, you know, to this day, that still kind of defines, you know, what Missouri is it's some things to some people and another thing to other people. And we all can't figure it out. And I think that it's one of the things that certainly makes, you know, recruiting, and you talk about, like, regionality. Like, I have always felt that Missouri was a really good fit for the Big Ten, and your timeline is pretty correct. So the rumor was that Missouri was being looked at for the Big Ten, and the Big Ten ended up taking Nebraska. And when the Big Ten took Nebraska, I think Missouri then said, "All right, you know, we're gonna take the next best thing." And the SEC looked at Missouri and as you know, the possibility of adding, you know, the TV markets in St. Louis and Kansas City, and kind of moving into those regions, and thought it was a good move, which is why, like, all the people that kind of talk about, like, the realignment stuff are like, oh, like, you know, well, the SEC should have taken, like, you know, Clemson or Florida State, and you're like, but they already have those TV markets. Like, this is, people don't realize this isn't about like what's best for the region. It's how can they add more money to their already enormous pie, and that's like, it's why it, like, Rutgers is where they are. Like who, like, Rutgers is not a Big Ten school, but, you know, the Big Ten wanted New York.
Yeah, Rutgers is the opposite of a Big Ten school, but that New York media market was just too juicy to.
Because we know how loyal the New York media market is to Rutgers.
Yeah, it's kind of silly too, just because we're seeing more cord cutters and cable, and then people aren't really paying for Big Ten Network or SEC Network as much anymore. So it is kind of a weird thing that, you know, earlier this decade it was that case, but maybe, you know, later this decade it won't be.
I think we've had this sort of, Sam and I have at least discussed in the context of basketball, which is what we pot about most of the time. And we're talking about football, which feels weird because I am admittedly not as much of a football guy anymore. You look at, like, even how Missouri's building its, like, non-conference schedules again. And I think I told Sam a couple months ago, you know, you look that they've added Kansas back. They've added, you know, they have Illinois consistently in there, and they're scheduling. You know, in the past couple of years, they've usually had a Big 12 team on the schedule, whether or not it's through the Big 12 SEC event or through a neutral site event. It, you know, it feels like Missouri, to a certain degree, the way it schedules in basketball for non-conference is almost like it's trying to go back to a phantom limb in a certain way. Like, it wants to offer fans, hey, you've seen Kansas State or Iowa State or Nebraska, who they might see in Myrtle Beach this year, or, you know, you might, you know, if you see Kansas State at a neutral site event or in Kansas City, I think it sort of speaks to what we're talking about here, which is you wouldn't be trying to go resurrect some of those regional rivalries if you felt confident about where the program was in terms of its fit within the SEC. And I even think about when Missouri plays Arkansas. You know, that doesn't feel like a true rivalry to me. It feels like it's the most proximal thing to the state. And, you know, there was some edge early on, you know, when they saw Mike Anderson again. But after a while, it became, oh, it's Mike. And, you know, we sort of know that. And we understand that he left to go back to what he considers, you know, a proxy home in Fayetteville. Like, there was a sort of rational that happened that was very logical for the fan base. And I think when you're trying to go into non-conference play and you're trying to build schedules, you're going back to a lot of teams that, for when Missouri switched conferences, there was a lot of animus. And now I think there's a lot of nostalgia for those games. And I think it speaks to, I think, the sort of identity crisis that we've been talking about for the last little bit, which is Missouri's, I think, trying to double dip in a certain sense. It's playing in the SEC and getting the financial sort of payoff from that move, but there's also a sort of understanding that in terms of fan interest, in terms of, you know, what's going to move, you know, people to want to purchase tickets, it may be having to, you know, go back and look at some matchups that, you know, people thought they had left behind. So I think that that's one of the weird things that we look at now, also through what the coronavirus has done in terms of scheduling, in terms of how, you know, these programs are putting together their non-conference schedules. It seems like regional scheduling has become the thing. And I just think it's an interesting time, you know, and a moment for a lot of programs. I think for Missouri, you know, they're not leaving the SEC anytime soon, but I think there's this sort of moment of reflection that's occurred where, oh yeah, we really made the most objectively rational choice and we're living with that. But, you know, what we gave up really was a sense of our identity. You know, whatever it was pinned to, we really gave that up. And I think that that's been something interesting to watch kind of the department and sort of fans work through at the same time.
Yeah, I'm hoping Mizzou, in the next few years or decade at least, just kind of does find that identity. I think it is a little awkward, and I think having KU back, lowercase K, I know a lot of Mizzou fans like to do that. I think having Kansas back,
it's a proper noun. I use the K. I respect proper nouns.
But yeah, I mean, I just think having Kansas back and just having that animosity again, it's going to make them feel a lot better. Just because, I mean, let's be real, guys. College sports is way more fun, way more intense when you have those hated rivalries. Sometimes they can go overboard. I've seen it in my own eyes with Michigan, Michigan State, some other rivalries around the country and everything. But just having Kansas back and being able to hate Kansas, I think, is going to be a big step. I'm hoping at least just because that means it'll be more exciting, fun games for me to go to. I love games that have great atmospheres, so I'll hope for that.
And you didn't get a lot of that this past year at Mizzou Arena. There wasn't a whole lot of games that packed the house.
Yeah, I think it was just Auburn and then I think one more, maybe Florida off the top. No, Florida, there was like a hailstorm.
Yeah, Florida was the ice storm, so there was like nobody there.
Yeah. And then, I mean, Mizzou kind of got, I was talking to this with a few team officials and they kind of got screwed with the schedule just because the first few was on the road and then I forgot what it was, but a lot of them, like the first however many games were on the road and then they're all on Tuesday games and it was just like kind of a weird thing where I kind of felt it on the season just because I was traveling a lot too, so.
Yeah, they ran into a situation, I think, when we talked in the preseason where you felt like January was going to be an inflection point for them, where like if they even came out of that at 500, you would have felt fine because they would have had some quad one wins and the back end was set up for them. Ideally, if they had been healthy and they had not sort of lacked Tillman for most of the conference schedule, that would have at least, you could have like looked back at January and said, okay, we came out at 3-4 or 4-3, but we got two quad one wins and now we can sort of feast a little bit on the weaker portion of the schedule because we've at least taken care of some work there. Charleston Southern complicated that because that was a quad 3 or 4 loss. I can't remember where they finished in net, but yeah, I think Sam and I talk all the time about we hold off on predictions until we see the conference schedule because really that's
smart, yeah.
I mean, when you have an unbalanced schedule, you can't make, I think, rational predictions because you're not going to see who's going where and sort of how things set up. And so that's the one thing you mentioned earlier that they're bringing a lot of production back. I think they're probably going to wind up, outside of Ole Miss, bringing back the most overall production in the league. But, you know, running it back only matters to a certain degree. It matters what the SEC hands them in terms of a schedule and how that sets up. If they, you know, the non-con schedule is looking a little bit tougher for them. And if they get a front-loaded SEC slate, it could be they could be gritting their teeth by the time February 1 gets here. So I think that's always the other thing to consider is, you know, what's going to be the slate that gets put in front of them. So I get why people are sort of skeptical on what Martin can do now moving forward, but nobody's seen the full slate in terms of what they're going to have to do and the hill they're going to have to climb.
Yeah, and I think that West Virginia Big 12 SEC Challenge game kind of threw another wrinkle in it just because that's another road game you have to go to. And I forgot what West Virginia was ranked at the time, but it wasn't looking great. I mean, they had a great first half, but obviously fell apart in the second half, which happened quite a bit last season. But yeah, and we'll see how it is. I think I'm going to go up on my soapbox a little bit, but it just, I mean, when you lose Jeremiah Tillman and Mark Smith, two of your starters, and just what Jeremiah kind of brought to that team, it just felt, the team won't use it as an excuse, and Reed played great as you know, kind of that backup thrust into the starter, but it's just, you just lose so much production all at once. I just don't think it was fair in some ways, just because I get you don't want to lose, and there were some losses that you should have won. You know, that Texas A&M game right at the buzzer comes to mind, a few others. I get it, but at the same time, it's just you lose so much of what you rely on. And we saw that the first 2 years, right, with Konza, with MPJ, and then Jonte. It's just, it's difficult when you lose your best player. I think a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, Drew had a great season, but there's only so much he can do, and he's not athletic enough, I think, which isn't a knock on him. He's a great basketball player, but he's just not athletic enough to really carry a team like Mizzou was asking him to. And it wasn't until X showed up that you really did feel like somebody could kind of carry the team. And then that obviously happened a little too late for them. So it is what it is, I guess, when you look back on it.
Well, I think when it comes to like the athleticism, I think you kind of bring it. And correctly, because you know Pinson, for all his maybe faults as a defender and maybe his issues with consistency, if he can find the right level of consistency, he certainly has the athleticism and the scoring ability to be a guy that Mizzou can rely on offensively. But I'm kind of curious, because if Mizzou has, for the first time in Konzo's tenure, a healthy basketball team all year, do you get the sense that, like, people around the program are kind of quietly confident that they can sort of get this turned around and get sort of the fans back on their side? Because I feel like there's a lot of skepticism from, the fan base currently over whether this is kind of going in the right direction. And even though, I feel like I try to do my best is to say, I realize that this hasn't gone the way we all wanted it to go. But it's also impossible to take the overall progress in the program into account, while just ignoring the fact that, the first 2 years you lost NBA players and lottery pick level NBA players from your roster. And then last year, going through a significant portion of conference play without your best player, or arguably your best player, but definitely your best inside player. And then the one weakness the team had was shooting, and to miss Mark Smith for a period of like 8 or 9 games it crushes a team with a relatively smaller margin of error. And so I'm kind of wondering, how confident do you think this team is kind of going into Konzo's year 4, where I think there's a lot of skepticism around the program from the fans?
Yeah. It's funny you ask that, because it reminds me of this one time about after that horrible start. I think it was before maybe the South Carolina game. So it seemed like the season was kind of teetering on the edge at that point. I remember it was like early February. I think people were asking themselves, is this season over? I remember talking to a few people and I'm like, hey, what's up? Like, how are you guys feeling? They're like, they were like, yeah, it's not great. But at the same time, they had that confidence level of, hey, if we make a run in the SEC tournament, which you're talented enough to do, then, hey, you don't know what's going to happen. And then they pointed again to Jeremiah wasn't back at that point. I think Mark was – it was like the early parts of Mark's injury, I want to say. And they were like, hey, if we get those two back, let's run it back. Let's see what we can do. And I think that's kind of the vibe I'm getting. I mean, if you got a Justin Turner, who I think Mizzou fans were really hoping for just because he could shoot and he was a scorer, I think if you got him, he'd feel a lot better. But – logistically speaking, the pieces do fit. I mean, Ed Chang, I know fans weren't exactly excited about him, but he can shoot the lights out of the ball. I think having more ball handlers is always a good thing with Drew Bugs. Side note, I asked Konzo about what he was going to do with two Drews along with three Smiths, and he doesn't know yet. But yeah, he was like, yeah, I don't know yet. I'm like, all right, Konzo, it's just more than you got two Drews now.
That's why last names are great. Just yell last names, and it's fine.
and then it just somehow gets worse for some reason. I think one thing too that people don't really realize, and I kind of got the vibe too, is that there were a lot of returners last season, but they were still kind of relatively young. In the sense that you were asking a lot out of, the Javon Pickett's, the Torrance Watson's, the Pinson's of the world. They were only sophomores. And then most of the guys you were relying on were juniors at that time. And you could kind of tell, when they struggled on the road to that, 1-8 SEC road record and they just couldn't finish games, I kind of saw it as just them not being able to finish because they weren't that, I don't want to say mature, but they just weren't seasoned veterans yet. And I think next year when you have, Tillman, Drew Smith, Mark Smith, Mitchell Smith. Oh my gosh, so many Smiths. But when you have them all seniors and you got, Xavier Pinson as a junior and you got another year of experience, I think you're looking at a team that hopefully can finish and win games on the road. So that's kind of where I stand on that, just because it was so weird that they, I tweeted this once. It was weird just because they would have like one 10-minute stretch where they were horrible, and then the rest of the game they were a good basketball team. It's just that one 10-minute stretch they sucked, and I don't know what you chalk that up to, but it was kind of the reality of the situation.
I think what they're going to do is, and we've written this, is they're going to. I think what they figured out to a certain degree is Torrance Watson can defend, and he's gotten better at rebounding and doing some of the things that are not always going to show up in the box score. But if he's going to be a floor spacer, they're going to need to see that he can produce pretty consistently. And once you couldn't get a Justin Turner who can make some things happen out of ball screens at different levels of the floor and against different coverages that he gets in those ball screens, what you really had to do is you had to sort of double down. And I think that's what our the read is and what the reporting has been, is that they're going to, you know, put guys in a ton of pick and rolls and are going to try and create out of that. And, you know, you can play Drew off the ball in various different sort of actions, and you can, you know, try and hunt for mismatches for Pinson. But for guys like Pickett and Watson, they're going to have to show that they deserve those minutes, that they're going to have to be able to supply some steady production at one at the other end of the floor. And if those guys can do that, if Torrance can knock down shots consistently, then you sort of open the offense up and you maybe revert to a little bit what they were doing through the first 20 games of the year, which was to create, you know, open jumpers. And if that works, then it's good. And now you've got Drew Buggs there as a good backup to ease some minutes, you know, from the workload that Drew had been handling down the stretch. And Ed Chang is another guy who I think can space out the floor a bit and be, you know, a pick and pop guy and is a wrinkle. But, you know, you could play Kobe Brown if he takes a step forward, mostly at the four spot. So I think really once they missed on Justin Turner, it became about, okay, we're not getting a ton of wing production, but our lead guards and our combo guards have done some things. So let's you know, try and ease up some workload on those two guys that are our ball handlers. And let's see if we can get a pick and pop guy or a floor spacer at the four to maybe give us what Mitchell Smith can't give us at times. Let's try and find some stop gaps at those spots. And if our veterans take a step forward, even better. So I think that's, again, I think a lot of times Missouri fans' skepticism is rightfully, you know, deserved and sort of in a good place. But you can see what the coaching staff is thinking when they made their moves this offseason. Now, we'll see if that you know, rationale bears itself out to be a good one. But, you know, if they get through this year at 16-16 and it's not working, then I think you can start to say, okay, maybe this isn't working. You know, it's been 4 years. You've had a full cycle with some guys, and we're not seeing the development and the steps forward. But I see where you're coming from and saying there were some guys with some experience, but had they really evolved into what they could be? That's where I think a lot of the sort of hesitation, at least from Sam and I, comes from in terms of rendering a verdict at this point. Because you can see sort of what the coaching staff's rationale is and sort of what they're trying to do and how they're trying to sort of adapt and evolve.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm real curious just to see how this all fits, just because, I mean, you rattle off a lot of names there that can conceivably and did see playing time last year, including two new additions who you figure will maybe crack the rotation. I guess Ed Chang might be more of a question mark there. But yeah, I mean, I think you make a great point in that you can kind of see where the coaching staff is going. And maybe if one of those guys, maybe if Torrance Watson isn't the shooter they think he is, and he continues kind of his cold streak. And I think maybe that was a little bit on the mental side last year. But if he does have another struggling shooting season, I think then you can kind of play around a little bit more just because you have a little bit more options. I think one area I'm kind of really interested to see is just backup center, because Parker Brown is probably the guy, but no. Will Axel Okongo do anything? Probably not, but maybe we'll see more. I mean, he was his situation was weird just because we asked Konzo, hey, is he going to play ever? And then he's like, I don't know. And then he trots him out there at Kentucky game one of SEC schedule. So I'm sure there's some kind of trust there, I guess. Yeah, it's a lot of moving pieces. I'm curious to see how it just all fits, just because there are a lot of different ways I think Konzo and his staff are going to go. And then I think we're going to see just, you know, a lot of different ways just because of a lot of different sets and just rotations just because of the way the season goes. And this time I don't think it'll be because of injuries. And I'm excited to see it just because I'm hoping to see some good basketball, which, you know, I don't cheer for teams, but I always hope for good basketball between two sides.
Well, Suichi, I think we've taken you a little past what we agreed upon beforehand. So I'm going to give you a chance to kind of, you know, plug yourself, just tell people where they can read your stuff and all that. I mean, not that, you know, KansasCity.com is hard to find, but go right ahead.
Yeah. Buy our sports pass. Listen to our podcast, Sports Beat KC. I make a... make an appearance every now and then. I'll have some recruiting stuff, I think, by the end of this
week.
The
people love recruiting.
Let me know more football at the beginning. Yeah, people love recruiting. It is. I've learned that covering college sports. They love recruiting. So I'll have a little bit of that later this week. So look out for it at KansasCity.com. Buy a sports pass. It's not very expensive. Plus, you get a lot of Chiefs coverage. And if you're, you know, if you're a Chiefs fan, I don't think it's possible to get enough of that right now. So... there's that.
Well, and definitely go give Suichi a follow on Twitter also. We will be giving you the great opportunity when this podcast goes live by tagging him, which we expect a retweet, so no pressure.
Right, it is. I said this off air, but Twitter is a fickle beast, so...
Use that mute button liberally. Well, Suichi, thanks for coming on. We will have you on again soon. I appreciate you taking the time out. It was fun.
Yeah, thanks, guys. We didn't get to talk much about booze, but I'm sure part two will include more of that.
Once again, I would like to thank Suichi Terada. He's doing a really good job at the Kansas City Star. If you are in the Kansas City area, I would really recommend, you know, paying for the Star's coverage. We encourage people paying for their journalisms. I am actually a Post-Dispatch subscriber. I know, Matt, you subscribe to like 40 different things. So subscribe to your local paper. I just happened to watch a recent Hasan Minhaj Patriot Act on Netflix, where he talked about the decimation of local newspapers, and we need them now more than ever, so go support them, including the Kansas City Star, because I think especially Suichi does a really, really good job on the Kansas City beat. And if you're on that side of the state, I mean, you have like the best team in football, I would think that you would want to get the best coverage on your Kansas City Chiefs. Right, Matt?
Yeah. This, as a ex-journalist who has had to, who's worked at family-owned shops and corporate-owned shops, let me say this. This is a soapbox moment. You will, like, if you live in Kansas City and paid for Power Mizzou, the New York Times, and the Kansas City Star, you'd outlay $35 a month. Think about the amount of interest and the amount of time you spend reading that stuff and caring about that stuff. The return on investment is way more than $35 a month. We've talked about it off air, but our goal is always to try and, in the mornings, aggregate the best coverage we can and put links in. But we hope, in trying to put that together for you folks, that you'll see just the immense value that guys like Suichi, Dave Matter, Gabe DeArmon, Mitchell Forty, you know, Langston Newman, Eric Blum, all these guys that are working every day in Columbia to give you content that you want to read and keep you in the loop. That takes time, it takes effort, it takes good editing, it takes good photographers to get art to go with that.
And that says nothing of Colin O'Brien's just amazing head of hair.
This is also true. Point being, think about this. You know, for $30 a month, if you're doing two locals and a national subscription, you're supporting journalism, you're supporting things you care about, you're supporting people telling you things that you couldn't know elsewhere. Because I mean, Sam and I love The Athletic. We love CJ Moore. We love reading national guys. But local beat writers are giving you the stuff that National guys only provide you when, honestly, when shit hits the fan or things are going exceedingly well. But the day in and day out, Columbia Tribune, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Kansas City Star, Power of Mizzou, shout out to Columbia, Missouri, and all the student journalists and the Maneater. All those folks are doing the day in, day out, and gritty. So throw them some money. Support them. Do what they're going to do, because if they're gone, you're going to notice it. Right now, you may take them for granted. But think of them as a couple good bottles of bourbon a month and give them some love, because that's how we think of them in our household here in ye olde Indianapolis, Indiana.
Well, I am completely out of my Weller Special Reserve in my glass, and I would like to put more in it. So I think it's time to wrap this up. You got anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here?
Nope. Just hope everybody's well. Hope they've got good things to put in their glass. And thank you for putting up with our shenanigans during this hour-long podcast.
I had a fairly lengthy post on the whole Black Lives Matter thing. I encourage anyone who hasn't already read it to go read it. Felt pretty good about it. There's a lot going on with that stuff. It's really complicated, and I don't think it's political to say that Black lives are important and we should take them seriously, right?
Yeah, I will say this. When you say all lives matter, it is an ignorant statement. I hope you reflect on that and think about it and try and educate yourself. This isn't a history podcast, but
there's a lot of heavy history to this country, and I think the important thing,
spend an hour thinking about it and then setting aside your preconceived notions, you'll realize that's not a loaded phrase. So shouts out to first of all, the University of Missouri Athletic Department for giving its coaches and its players the latitude to use their platform and use the platform of the department to advocate that message. And I'm going to continue doing this, and this is another basic riff. Really great job by the football program and the basketball program for using their megaphone and their platform for productive conversations, productive steps.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
So like I said, if you haven't read it, please go read it. If you have feedback, you can always send it to me. I am unafraid of both positive and negative feedback. I received both on that post, and mostly positive, so I'm happy about that. But I'm looking forward to the conversation kind of expanding and kind of seeing where it goes. And I think this has really been an educational few weeks for a lot of us. Even those that were already kind of on that side of the fence, I've still kind of learned a lot. So thank you for everybody for tuning in and kind of putting up with this part of the podcast, as well as the first part of the podcast where Matt and I, you know, talk nonsense about bourbon for extended periods of time. We will be back in a couple weeks. I think we're probably going to keep looking for guests. So if you have anybody that you want to hear from, let us know. And until then, thanks for tuning in.